Now, it's time for the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin.
Cybersecurity News Bite, episode number 88 for April 12th, 2025. PowerSchool breach: when delete doesn't mean gone. When your toaster joins a cybercrime ring. The Phantom Back Door: 6 years of silent sabotage. And the telemessage debacle in government communications. Welcome back to another Cybersecurity News Bite. I am your host, Jim Guckin, covering the news stories I think you should pay attention to in the week that passed. The first one actually is a very interesting one because it's something I don't know if I talked about in the show, but I've warned people in the past that this is a very dangerous thing to go down. But there's a company called PowerSchool, who is a major educational data management provider. They had a data breach. Then they assured everyone who used their systems that, hey, the situation was contained, stolen data was deleted after they paid the ransom. Now, those victims are getting emails and kind of saying, yeah, I still have your data. Please send payments that you don't want this to go out to North Carolina Public School employees, saying the malicious actor still has the data in hand. So this is one of the scenarios in which PowerSchool was breached. They paid the ransom. They claim that they had witnessed the deletion of this data. But anyone in IT will tell you that deleting data doesn't always mean deleting data. So, back up a bit. This initially takes place back in December 2024. PowerSchool systems were breached. They had personal data of students and teachers that were exposed. The breach was apparently due to some kind of compromised credentials that didn't have MFA in place that allowed unauthorized attackers to access the system and pretty much steal the data. As I said, the PowerSchool system kicked the hackers out. They paid the ransom. They claimed to have witnessed the deletion of stolen data via video, which is always a great way of confirming your data was deleted. And then they turned around and assured everyone, the stakeholders, their customers, hey, the situation was contained. The data that was compromised would not be made public. Yeah, and that's fine in December of 2024, January 25, February 25, March 25, April 25. But in May of 2025, North Carolina Public School employees started receiving emails from individuals claiming they still possess this stolen data and they want their cryptocurrency payment, you know, so you can't track it, to be paid so they don't release the data. Now, North Carolina Department of Public Instruction and Powerhouse School have notified law enforcement officials in the U.S. and Canada that maybe things weren't on the up and up, that the data might still be out there. The Department of Public Instruction for North Carolina advised recipients of the threatening emails to not engage and report such incidents through their official channels. North Carolina schools plan to transition from PowerSchool to a new system called Infinite Campus for data management starting in July, probably before it was made public that data wasn't actually deleted. But main system gets breached. You see this a lot. The company A that you are is your vendor gets breached. If you have a suitable company, you move to company B just because the trust there is broken. Not saying that company B or company A is any worse off after the breach, but it's what people seem to feel. So public schools are moving from one to the other, but the damage is done. So what can you do? Flat out, just make sure all your applications, whether you're a vendor or some other thing, has robust access controls, meaning that the accounts with administrative privileges use multi-factor, and there's some logging around to look for any kind of unusual activity. Since this was a third-party vendor, make sure you vet your third-party vendors thoroughly. Make sure that they all have multi-factor by default turned on, especially if they're handling sensitive data, meaning customer or, in this case, employee data. Make sure you're regularly auditing them and making sure they're going through compliance checks to make sure that they're dealing with vulnerabilities, they're having their pen tests, they are secure with your data in the end. And, I mean, number one here is make sure you have an instant response plan, too, so that when the inevitable does happen, and no matter how good you are, no matter how good your vendors are, it's going to happen, that you have an instant response plan. What are you going to do? You prepare for potential breaches. You know the communications. You know everything you're going to do before you do it. As always, I'm going to say educate your staff on best practices, recognizing phishing emails, making sure they have a proper level of passwords in place that's not easy to guess. Make sure that you're only giving vendors data that they need. So limit the data collection they have. Make sure it's only necessary data. Nothing more than you need, so that if their breach does happen, that you're not giving over too much information. Monitor for any kind of unusual activity, logins from somewhere you weren't expecting, especially for some of these admin accounts. And make sure you're communicating transparently. Once an event happens, you're telling people exactly what you know so that you're not surprised when something like this happens in the future. For our second story this week, there was a cybersecurity ring that was taking over IoT and EOL devices, end of life, IoT Internet of Thing devices. And it was called Operation Moonlander. Both Dutch and U.S. authorities dismantled this proxy botnet out there, which had at least 7,000 machines infected. Once again, these are IoT devices, meaning things you buy and you connect to the internet and may never patch. And end of life devices, routers and so forth, that people weren't necessarily keeping up to date. So this network is powered by the Moon malware. It has been in operation since 2004. And what they did with this botnet, this IoT device or end-of-life devices, was they offered their customers anonymized proxy service, mostly to cyber criminals, because most legitimate people don't need to go through a service just like this. And they generated over $46 million in revenue since 2004. By compromising such devices and selling them. Most of these devices, the 7,000 were identified, were in U.S., Canada, and Ecuador. The infrastructure of this was all exposed, vulnerable IoT or end-of-life devices. So cameras you put on the internet, your router that may not have patches. And what they did was they used the malware, gained access, and then kind of did an in and out of people's networks. The traffic came in, bounced back out with your IP, so that if someone were to do something malicious, it wouldn't be my IP they saw, it'd be your IP, and you'd probably get law enforcement actions. The Moon malware was used to give them remote control access and gain persistence on these devices. Now, what they did afterwards was sell that access to third parties, malicious third parties who used it for cyber crime activities, credential stuffing, hosting malicious websites. All of this was once again to allow malicious people to do malicious things. So the good thing was, I mean, it, just like everything else in today's market, they offered a subscription fee depending on your taste. From $9.95 a month to a whopping $110 per month, which I really want to know what was included in that tier plan. All of this was, as I said, got $46 million in revenue, and the victims didn't know, but malicious people were in their networks. So in May 2025, a coordinated effort with Dutch and U.S. law enforcement agencies led to the takedown of the botnet's infrastructure. Now, people tend to think, when you think botnet infrastructure, how big this could be. And all this was four individuals who ran this whole thing. Three of them Russians, one of them from Kazakhstan. They were charged by the U.S. Department of Justice due to their roles operating and profiteering from proxy services. They seized domains which stopped the command and control systems. So figure four people, that's the ring in which scammers are running. How big is their infrastructure? Well, five servers. That's it. Just five servers. Four of them communicating over port 80. One of them using UDP over 1443. These five servers manage the infected devices, facilitating data exfil and control of the thing. The malware is exploited known vulnerabilities in some outdated devices, which is why they were targeting end-of-life devices or IoT devices, which almost never get patched. So, how do you keep... I mean, granted, this one's down. The command and control system's down. You don't have to worry about the moon. But how do you defend yourself here? Regularly update and patch your devices. One of the things I do try to do very often is make sure I'm going into my IoT devices and my routers and making sure they're constantly updated. Though, look, IoT devices don't get updated nearly as much as your computer does. Things happen, especially after a year or two. They just don't get updated, and this is kind of what happens. So make sure they're segmented kind of on their own network so that they can't jump around, or if they infect your computer, they can't find the end-of-life device. Don't make these devices open to the internet. Is a really good one. If devices are end-of-life, please replace them because they're not getting patches anymore, hence they become vulnerable. And those should be the good ways of doing the best you can to make sure you don't end up as a part of a botnet, giving criminals a place to hide. For our third story, I want to say this shows you sometimes how far in advance a malicious actor will compromise something and leave it just sitting there until they activate it one day. And this is because there was a coordinated supply chain attack between 500 and 1,000 Magento-based e-commerce stores. And we've talked about Magento as the plugin before that has other sort of attacks on there. But this particular one was directed at Magento, a huge e-commerce-based store program with 21 backdoored extensions. These extensions sum as far back as 2019, 6 years, contained a dormant PHP backdoor that laid that way until April of this year. Once it was turned on, it granted the attackers full control over the affected servers. Malicious code allowed for them to run their own code, steal data, gain admin access, and posed risk to both customers and the merchants themselves because they controlled the server totally. Now, luckily, this was found out by SANSEC, which is a company that does e-commerce vulnerability and malware scanning. Obviously, they were going to catch it first. They identified 21 Magento extensions, inject it with the PHP backdoor. Right now, they primarily say that these are from three different plugin manufacturers, Tigren, Midashi, and MGS. The backdoor resides in the license verification file and it remained dormant for years before they used it. In April, these doors were activated, the PHP code connected, they uploaded web shells, they gained admin access. Now, according to SANSEC, these three vendors had very different ways of responding. Tigren denied any breach and continued to distribute their affected extensions, according to SANSEC. Mitashi acknowledged the server breach but didn't confirm an extension compromise, and MGS, at the time that the article was written, didn't respond to comments. So, how do you check for this? One, always show notes gives you more access to the news articles which I pulled this from. But Tigren, if you're using any of these extensions, Ajax Suite, Ajax Cart, Ajax Login, Ajax Compare, Ajax Wishlist, and Multi-COD. Mitanashi, if you're using Image Clean, Cookie Notice, Flat Shipping, Facebook Chat, Currency Switcher, or Deferred JS. And if you're using MGS, Lookbook, Store Locator, Brand, GDPR, Portfolio, Pop-Up, Delivery Time, Products, Tag, Products, Tabs, and Blog are all the ones which SANSEC says are impacted. So, you know, yes, there's this one. You can look for those and you can uninstall or switch to another thing. But how do you protect yourself? Regularly check your installed extensions. Make sure you're going through a code review where you can. I know it's not possible for everyone, but at least every so often you should be looking through this stuff to see if there's any unauthorized code or signs of tampering, something that just looks not out of place. Make sure you're sourcing your extensions from trusted vendors. In this place, these were trusted vendors, so kind of hard to do. Make sure you're looking for File Integrity Monitor if you have the ability to do so. So use tools to look at critical files for any kind of unexpected change. This can indicate a compromise or this backdoor being put in place. Conduct security scans using something like a plugin scanning tool. Make sure you have a backup and recovery plan so that if this is you, you can kind of wipe it out and restore it back pretty quick. And as always, and the toughest one is educate your development teams on making sure that they're using secure coding practices. They're looking at any code that they are using, not just on the top level, but any code that code itself installs is a good way to protect yourself. So for our final story, I want to not necessarily call attention to the base story itself, but some of the dangers that are involved in it. So the current Trump administration is using an application called TeleMessage. This is to archive encrypted communications. TeleMessage is a modified version of the Signal app, which is end-to-end encryption. Now, this solution introduced other security vulnerabilities, which were breached by hackers who accessed data from U.S. agencies. And that's not something you want when you're sending what you believe are encrypted messages back and forth. Now, Senator Ron Wyden has called for the Justice Department to investigate into whether the use of telemessage has compromised any national security or violated any federal laws. Once again, the thing is here's a tool that everyone knows is a very secure Signal. And here is a off branch of it called telemessage, which is used to do what is right, to back up these things and make sure that they're held in compliance with laws. But in doing so, that you're pulling it out of the app now has created issues. The Trump administration has sought a solution to archive some encrypted messages. TeleMessage, which is an Israeli-developed app, was adopted to fulfill this need to save these messages. Hackers have breached the telemessage system, accessing data from U.S. agencies such as the Customs and Border Protection. The contents of the messages the hackers have were not disclosed. This breach kind of highlights the telemessage app's vulnerabilities and what happens when sensitive information gets leaked. Now, the Justice Department is going to investigate the telemessage's security practices, most of this being questioning whether the company misrepresented its security features and potential violations of the False Claims Act and involvement of foreign governments. But once again, this really comes down to the debate of third-party applications for government communications. Do they meet security assessments? Do they adhere to the federal records laws? Which is why they're using this application in the third place. They needed this third-party app to do what they were legally required to do, and because it was a modified version, because they were trying to meet these security assessment and records laws for federal agencies, hence the problem. So how do you vet yourself, or how do you defend yourself? One, you vet third-party applications as thoroughly as you can. Make sure that they are not just saying things, because salespeople will tell you whatever they want, but that they actually can do this. There's a third party that comes in and does assessments of these things to validate these claims. Implement robust security protocols so that you know that the communication channels are as secure in rest and in transit the best you can be. Monitor those communication channels. Make sure no one's accessing them unauthorized. Ensure compliance with legal and regulatory standards, which is what they were trying to do here, and report any kind of security incidents immediately. In this case, that just said, hey, there's weird system, we're letting you know. Hiding it never really works out, and it causes bigger problems. But I think you're going to see this as companies have to sometimes retain records. They have to pull data out of a very secure app and put it in a different app so that they can maintain it for backups or other legal requirements. And here's where, that caused a problem. And as I said, I didn't want to focus on the story itself, but how they were trying to fix a problem, which ultimately led to a bigger problem. Thanks for tuning into this week's Cybersecurity News Bite. You can catch all the links, details, and show notes over at cybersecuritynewsbite.com. If you're curious about the man behind the mic, head over to jimguckin.com, or you can always shoot me a message at me@jimguckin.com. Make sure you stay safe online, and we'll talk again next week.
You've been listening to the Cybersecurity News Bite with Jim Guckin. Learn more about our show at cybersecuritynewsbite.com.